The following sermon was delivered on Friday, December 18th, 2015.
Dear friends, each year congregations across the country select one Sabbath Eve around Hanukkah time specifically to celebrate their commitment to human rights. We are doing so tonight. For years, long before the events of the last 3 months elevated the subject of immigration to the place it now occupies in our national discourse, our nation's leaders have been debating reform to our immigration system. And so we invited Rabbi Jenny Rosen, Vice President of HIAS, to speak to us on the topic. But then the Syrian refugee crisis entered our awareness as it hadn't previously, as we looked on horrified at the plight of hundreds of thousands migrating across Europe. And then came the terrorist attacks in Paris and California, inspired by Islamist extremism, which led not just to legitimate discussions about how to balance compassion with security, but to a fear-mongering and bigotry, suggesting that all the Middle East's Muslim refugees, themselves the victims of Islamist terror, pose a threat to our safety. So Rabbi Rosen's presence tonight is more timely than we ever could have anticipated. Rabbi Rosen is the Vice President for Community Engagement at HIAS. The Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society was established in 1881 to assist Jews fleeing the terror of the pogroms of Russia and Eastern Europe. And of course, HIAS played a critical role resettling Jews during the Holocaust, though tragically its abilities were limited by the national origins quota of 1924, a law HIAS later helped replace. Through our philanthropic fund, Temple Emmanuel has been a regular supporter of HIAS, this year with an additional gift to assist workers on the ground in Turkey and Jordan addressing the current crisis. Prior to coming to HIAS, Jenny played a catalytic role in building the Jewish social justice movement in America and the field of Jewish service. She was the director of the Jewish Life and Values Program at the Nathan Cummings Foundation. There she developed innovative initiatives such as the Sela Leadership Training Program and the Jewish Social Justice Roundtable, which met here at Temple Emmanuel last week. Under Jenny's leadership, the Jewish Life and Values Program also worked to amplify a progressive religious voice in America, advance American engagement in the Middle East peace process, and cultivate the environmental movement and women as agents of change in Israel. Before working at the Cummings Foundation, she served as a campus rabbi at Columbia University and the Barnard College Hillel. She has been a teacher for dozens of communities and organizations, including the American Jewish World Service, with which we have a wonderful relationship. She also serves on the faculty of the Wexner Graduate Fellowship Program. A founding board member of Avodah, the Jewish Service Corps, and Repair the World, she served on the boards of the Jewish Funders Network and New York Jobs with Justice, and she has twice been named one of the Forward's 50 Jews in America. Rabbi Rosen was ordained right here by the Hebrew Union College Jewish Institute of Religion, where she was a Wexner Graduate Fellow, and it brings me great joy to welcome to the pulpit my classmate, Rabbi Jenny Rosen.
Thank you, Rabbi Davidson. This summer, we read with horror the news that 71 people had died in the back of a truck on an Austrian highway, saw Syrian and Iraqi refugees packed one on top of another in the broiling summer heat, people taking desperate measures to escape the violence in their homeland. Only a few weeks later, we saw the photo of Ayan Kurdi, a small boy whose body washed up on the Turkish shore after his family attempted to reach safety by boat. When I saw this photo, my heart broke open. I know I was not alone. We woke up to a crisis that had been going on for years. But the Syrian refugees escaping, seeking safety in Europe, that is only a small part of a much larger, vaster, and more global crisis. This summer, closer to home, we read of Central American children and families who fled ruthless violence, crossing mountains and deserts to reach our land, only to be held in jail-like detention. Earlier, the world watched as hundreds of Rohingya Muslims from Burma took to sea on boats to flee persecution. Many of them died of thirst, starvation, and exposure. Refugees are risking their lives and fleeing from many places. The Democratic Republic of Congo, Honduras, Eritrea, Colombia, Sudan, Burma, Ukraine, the list goes on and on and on. There are more refugees today than there have been since World War II. Every day, when we open the newspaper, we are confronted with the faces of people from all corners of the world who have endured persistent persecution and left everything they know behind and fled in search of safety. Today, there are 60 million refugees and displaced people, people who have been forced to flee their homes simply because of who they are or what they believe. 60 million, it's a difficult number to fathom. So what do we do when we're confronted with these faces? We may read a bit, we may not, but then we turn the page. We are overwhelmed, we're not sure how we could possibly make a difference, and it's difficult to comprehend the depth of their vulnerability. It can be painful to wake up. Hearing their stories reminds us that it could be us experiencing these losses, losing our home, our work, our family, our life as we know it. That it has been us. Just a few generations ago, it was us on those boats being turned away. It was us making the unbearable choice to send our children into the woods or onto trains in those final moments as we were herded into camps. And of course, thousands of years ago, it was us, the ancient Israelites who wandered in the desert after fleeing from the Egyptians. We are a refugee people. And this is why we cannot simply turn away or turn the page. The Torah teaches us not once, not twice, but 36 times to welcome the stranger, to protect the stranger, even to love the stranger. Why? It is one of those rare instances where we're actually given a reason for a mitzvah. We are told, Ki gerim haitem be'eretz Mitzrayim, because you were strangers in the land of Egypt. And indeed, that has been our story over and over again throughout history. We have been the stranger in a strange land. We have been the other. We have been persecuted. We have been forced to flee. And we have survived and even thrived. As we awaken to the severity of today's refugee crisis, it does, for many of us, feel familiar. Refugees on trains in Europe trying to cross borders, boats being turned away, families risking everything to make perilous journeys. It is because this has been our story for generations that Hyas exists. As Rabbi Davidson mentioned, Hyas is a 134-year-old Jewish organization that some of you may know by its former name, Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society. We are the Jewish response to refugees. Some of you may have heard of Hyas before. Perhaps you, your parents, your grandparents were even helped by Hyas when you came to this country. Founded in 1881 on the Lower East Side of Manhattan and the oldest refugee organization in the world, we were the ones at the docks and Ellis Island greeting and helping waves of arriving Jews. For our first 120 years, we rescued and resettled Jewish refugees. Jews fleeing Tsarist Russia and the horrors of the Holocaust. Jews fleeing the Iranian Revolution and the Soviet Union. Hyas helped them start new lives and adapt and become part of America. Then at the turn of the 21st century, after the final wave of Russian Jews came to the US, Hyas had a choice to make. Should we close up shop now that there were very few Jewish refugees? Or should we take our 120 years of knowledge, experience, and connections around the world and turn our focus to the millions of today's refugees who are fleeing hatred, bigotry, violence, and death. We chose the latter, and today we work with refugees of all ethnic and religious backgrounds. We like to say that HIAS used to help refugees because they were Jewish. Now we help refugees because we are Jewish. Let me stop for just a moment to give a bit of a background about what makes a person a refugee. Refugees are people who cannot return to their countries of origin due to a well-founded fear of persecution on the basis of who they are or what they believe. It was actually the aftermath of World War II, in direct response to the horrors of Jews not being able to find safe haven, or even worse, being forced to return to the very countries where they were being persecuted. It was because of this that the nations of the world codified the concept of refugee. In the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and the 1951 Refugee Convention, the nations of the world committed themselves to recognize refugees as anyone persecuted for their religion, ethnicity, nationality, political views, or membership in a particular social group. It declared that a refugee shall not be returned to his or her persecutor. It declared that anyone claiming to be a refugee shall be regarded as a refugee until found otherwise. And it declared that refugees are entitled to the same human rights that you and I are. 148 countries have signed these conventions, including the United States, Israel, and the entire European Union. They committed themselves to never sending back refugees to the country of their persecution, but rather to find what is called, in the language of refugee speak, permanent, durable solutions. And there are three possible durable solutions: repatriation, resettlement in a welcoming third country, and integration. Though highly desirable, sadly for most, repatriation is not an option, given the intractable nature of most of the conflicts of the world. And in the cases when it is achieved, it is often not in the lifetimes of the people who have fled. So what about resettlement in a third country? I find this to be the most startling statistic of all. Less than 1% of the world's refugees are resettled. In 2015, the US committed to resettle 70,000 refugees, fewer than half the number of refugees that we resettled just 10 years ago. As you may have heard, in October, President Obama raised that number to 85,000 for 2016 and 100,000 in 2017. This is a step in the right direction, but still a fraction not only of what is needed, but also of what we have done in the past. But even if our government joins with Europeans to take hundreds of thousands of refugees in response to this crisis, for the vast majority of refugees in the world, the only durable solution is to integrate into the first country into which they fled. So in which of these arenas does HIAS work? We work internationally with refugees trying to integrate and make a new life for themselves in this country that they fled to. And we work here in the US with refugees who have come to be resettled. Our international work is on the ground in 10 countries around the world, where we do three things. We provide legal services, we provide psychosocial support, as the majority of refugees have survived terrible trauma, and three, we help train refugees in livelihoods so that they can sustain themselves and their families. We work with the most vulnerable refugees in both camps and urban settings, so this is our international work. Here in this country, HIAS works with 22 partners, largely Jewish family service agencies, to resettle refugees across the United States, helping them find housing, enroll their children in school, get job training, learn English, and generally adapt to American culture. Refugees who are resettled are generally the most vulnerable, perhaps a single-parent family or LGBT refugees, people for whom integration is not possible or safe. And finally, HIAS does robust advocacy in DC, ensuring that governments and international bodies do more to protect and resettle refugees. Given that this is the core work of HIAS, It's been powerful to witness and help the American Jewish community awaken to today's refugee crisis. There has been a great outpouring of support. This fall, thousands joined our advocacy efforts, calling on the U.S. to show bold leadership and commit to resettling a significantly larger number of Syrian refugees. Hundreds of rabbis spoke about refugees over the high holidays, and hundreds more individuals, congregations, and Jewish communal organizations across the country have reached out, seeking opportunities to support refugees right in their local communities. And many are giving tzedakah to help save lives, to help refugees to rebuild their lives with dignity. But just as on September 2nd, with the photo of three-year-old Aylan Kurdi, just as on September 2nd, our eyes and hearts were suddenly opened, once again, in a single day, everything changed. On Friday, November 13th, there were the horrific attacks in Paris. The terrifying news that the attacks were connected to ISIS, combined with the misperception that they were related to an increase in migration of refugees from Syria, has led to a significant backlash against refugees. There have been calls from politicians, as you know, across America to stop the resettlement of Syrians in the U.S., to add layers and layers of security protocols onto a refugee program that already effectively screens for security, and even, unbelievably, to register all Muslims who are U.S. citizens. The shooting in San Bernardino has added another layer of fear, and this has been followed by a surge of anti-refugee and anti-Muslim sentiment and rhetoric. Many of us, understandably, are afraid in the face of increasing reminders of global terrorism. The extremism and violence on fire across the globe is terrifying. And fear is powerful. It is not only emotional, we feel it in our kishkas, we feel it in our bodies. Our Torah portion this week, Vayigash, lands us right in the middle of our patriarch's journeys. Joseph has revealed himself to his brothers, and now Jacob is about to leave his homeland, Canaan, for Egypt. And he is afraid. How do we know he is afraid? Because we read in our parsha that God says, Yaakov, Yaakov, Anochi ha'el Elohei avicha, al tira merda mitzrayma. Jacob, Jacob, I am God, the God of your fathers, fear not to go down to Egypt. The commentators point out that if Jacob were not afraid, God would not have to come and say, don't be afraid, which is fair logic. One can imagine Jacob's fears as he leaves home for a strange land. What sort of terrible things might happen there? And yet, as the Radak, a medieval French rabbinic commentator, points out, God does not reassure Jacob that terrible things won't happen. Instead, he reassures him by saying, you will become a great nation, a goy gadol. The redeeming feature of this journey is that something profoundly good will come from it. It's the difference between saying, you will escape horrific dangers, and saying, wonderful things will happen to you. In the context of refugees, there is a lot of fear to go around. Refugees are often very afraid when they leave their homeland for a strange and unknown land, even as they're usually terrible afraid in their home country, and that is why they're fleeing in the first place. The whole definition of a refugee is one who has well-founded fear of persecution. And for those who are lucky enough to be resettled in a third country, they are often again quite afraid, even when that third country is allegedly welcoming. Afraid of xenophobia, afraid of who their children will grow up to be in this new culture. Afraid because they can't speak the language, afraid because they don't know what the future holds. And what about the people in the land they flee to, or the country in which they're ultimately resettled? What about us? We are also afraid. Afraid of terror, afraid of strange and closed-minded worldviews, afraid of negative impacts on our economy, afraid of overcrowded neighborhoods and schools. In every generation, refugees have been met with fear, uncertainty, and suspicion. And yet, our nation has a long legacy of providing refuge. It is, in fact, one of the foundations upon which our great nation is built. refugees are no small part of what has made America a goy gadol. This week's Parsha calls us to be courageous and step forward even in the face of fear. What can help us to counter our understandable fears? As I will speak about in a minute, I think it is three things: our history, information, and our values. Whether we let our fear overtake us or respond with courage will not just have impact on the refugees we do or do not let into our country. And it will not just have impact on the United States of America. It will also have impact on who we are, as individuals, as people, as Jews, and as Americans. Who do we want to be? I am proud to say that even as our nation experienced a harsh backlash against refugees in the wake of the Paris attacks and the San Bernardino shootings, even so, much of the Jewish community has refused to simply stop at fear and is bringing that fear face to face with our history, with information, and with our values. Our history. We know all too well as Jews what it is like to be demonized and shut out. The frequent references recently to the SS St. Louis, the boat with more than 900 Jews fleeing Nazi Germany that America sent back to Europe in 1939. These references are because we stand at risk once again of closing our doors to people fleeing persecution and violence. We stand at risk once again of making a tragic decision in a political climate of fear and suspicion. We stand once again of confusing our enemy with the victims of our enemy. But our history alone may not sufficiently overcome our fear. It's also important to know the facts, to understand the multi-layered, rigorous screening processes that all refugees resettled in the US must undergo before they even enter the country, including vetting by the Department of Homeland Security, the State Department, the FBI, and the National Counterterrorism Center. By the way, this is a completely different process than what occurs in Europe, where people simply show up on the shores and borders of Europe seeking asylum. But ultimately, for many of us, it is not history or facts that make the difference. It is Jewish values that challenge or channel our first response. When we are told to welcome the stranger, or even more challenging, to love the stranger, there is an underlying assumption that this might not be our first instinct. The mitzvah calls us to push past our initial fear and discomfort. It is an act of courage to welcome the stranger. And many in the Jewish community have acted with courage. More than 1,000 rabbis across the country and of all denominations, including all of the rabbis serving here, signed a letter to elected officials calling on them to exert moral leadership and not to hamper or halt the U.S. refugee resettlement program. A large number of national Jewish organizations have issued similar statements, and individuals and congregations across the country have raised their voices to say we must not close our doors to those seeking refuge. This is courage. This is the possibility of what we can be when we overtake fear. Al tira, don't be afraid, for you will be a goy gadol, a great nation. These past few weeks, the world has felt particularly shattered and frightening and full of evil. And we are challenged as Jews to acknowledge this darkness and fear, but not to let it become misplaced. And not to let it blind us or our community to our own values, to who we seek to be as individuals, as Jews, and as a nation. So I ask each of you, on your way out, to please take one of these cards. It outlines four ways that you can do something right now to make a difference, through advocating, volunteering, giving tzedakah, or simply learning more. There are many ways you can become part of this historic moment, and this truly is a historic moment. Never before have we, the Jews, a refugee people, not been refugees ourselves, but instead been in a position to change the future for today's refugees. We have woken up, and now it is time to honor our history, live out our values, and act with courage. Shabbat shalom.